It is episode 119 of the Hodgepodge Podcast. I'm your host, Doug.
And I'm Dirty A. As the name suggests, we're going to talk about a hodgepodge of topics from movies, music, TV, and other pop culture events.
And on this episode, we'll be discussing the films Pete's Dragon, War Dogs, Hell or High Water, and Ben-Hur, the new one.
Ben-Hur?
You can reach us at thehodgepodgepodcast@gmail.com or on our website, thehodgepodgepodcast.com. Or look us up on iTunes and YouTube and subscribe. Or go on over to Facebook and search for the Hodgepodge Podcast and like our page. And as is the norm, we'd like to welcome back a friend of the show, Matt King. Hi, Matt.
Am I on?
Yes.
Okay.
You can put your phone away.
Okay.
Matt's back. He'll be discussing
two
of the movies with us?
No, I'm going to discuss all four.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. Yeah. As is your wont.
Yes.
I don't even know what the hell this movie's about. Before we get started and get into our...
Pete's Dragon is a porno. So.
I know. Okay.
Before we get started with our movie news, I'm going to say everyone should go see Kubo and the Two Strings.
But me. Everyone but me.
Everyone but Dirty A should go see Kubo and the Two Strings. It's excellent. I saw it yesterday. It's not only the best movie of the summer, I think. It's, as of right now, it's... the best movie of the year, probably.
Well, to be fair, you didn't see Mothra.
That's not this year.
Technically, that's not.
That's an old movie. Yeah. That's...
But I saw it this year.
Oh,
but it doesn't matter.
But we're talking about the best movies I've seen this year.
I see.
Mothra.
Actually, I was talking about the best movies of the year. So I also didn't see Bad Moms. So you know.
So you don't know if it's. The
I
best
don't know
movie
if it's the best
year.
Movie of the year. Go see Kubo and the Two Strings. You won't regret it. And take the kids. So movie news. Good news for all the racists out there, because the race war is about to start. And it's all over Zendaya being revealed as Mary Jane Watson in Spider-Man Homecoming.
Spider-Man, race war.
That'll be the next one. That'll be the sequel. Yeah, as usual, the nerd movie rage erupted. This weekend when it hasn't been totally confirmed yet, or...
Yeah, I think it was on a call sheet or something.
Heavily,
like that.
Okay. Yeah. That Zendaya is not playing Michelle, or whatever the hell they said her name was. Yeah. She is going to be Mary Jane Watson. I'm totally fine with it. Because Mary Jane Watson has to be two things. Pretty? Check. And she has to have red hair. And you can make that happen. Check. The end. That's Mary Jane Watson. It's like, you know, it's like, just write her well, and that's all that matters. And maybe don't make her a damsel in distress every single freaking time.
Well, good luck with that.
Yeah
that's right. Pretty much going to happen.
Make that fat kid that's in there, make him the damsel in distress. The dude in distress.
I think as long as we get Spider MJ, I'm okay. I'm good.
No.
I want Spider Gwen, and I want Gwenpool.
Oh,
that's not going to happen. And
but Silk might be in it.
Okay.
Like, for real. Not for kidding. Silk might be in it. And then Bokeem... What's his last name?
Woodside.
Bokeem Woodside, recently of Fargo fame, is going to be playing Shaka.
Yeah, that's right, he is.
Yeah
he is. This movie just went to rated X.
Yeah, it did.
Oh, Lightning. Shocker.
Yes.
I don't know if that's a good idea after coming off of Amazing Spider-Man 2.
What?
Having another electricity villain.
Well, he's not exactly... I don't know. I don't think anybody's going to confuse him with Electro.
Is he going to give all the girls the shocker? Is that what's going? Is that his power in this movie?
Yes.
He is Powder's nemesis.
Did you hear that they took... Steven Tyler's like an image
at
of
Disney.
Him that's been
Rock
at Disney
Roller
forever
Coaster,
on Rock and Roller Coaster, where he's like actually given the shocker hand.
Oh, really?
So, like part of the ride is you drive into the studio and they're recording.
Oh, okay.
And it's a video of them recording, and he's in there like doing the shocker image on the video. I guess someone finally.
Like,
I mean, it's been there forever.
Yeah,
and someone finally pointed it out, and they took it out.
They blur out his hand.
Tyler put some angry tweet about it. I don't know.
So he's still alive. Wow.
Well, they're going to tour again.
Still kicking.
Yeah.
No, that's Simple Minds.
They have talked about...
They're alive and kicking.
They have talked about their final farewell. They've never actually said they're done, but they are talking.
You know
about
who else hasn't? The Rolling Stones.
That's right.
Those guys are going to tour until Mick Jagger dies on stage.
I hope I'm there. Someone start him up! Start him up! Goddamn it! Start him up!
Speaking of Mick Jagger, and what kind of world are we leaving for Keith Richards?
I love that name. Think about what kind of world you want to leave for Keith Richards.
He's the human cockroach. He never dies. No, but speaking of Mick Jagger, I was I'm thinking about getting into some detective fiction and stuff like that. And so I was looking up some
like writing it or reading.
Yeah,
it?
Like writing it. Writing oh, okay. It, and reading it and reading more of it and writing more. Don't say like all right. Like
I was just curious which one you
get reading? Out. I'm not kidding.
You we can take this off the discussion off the podcast.
No, no. But anyway, I was reading up about Fletch, the movie Fletch, and the series, the book series. The first one was based on the first book. But anyway, did you know that they were considering Mick Jagger to play Fletch at one time?
Nope.
I was like, Mick Jagger? I was like, who the fuck was thinking that?
Mick Jagger.
Yeah. Mick Jagger. Yeah. I'm going to play Fletch.
I think I should play Fletch. No. That whatever.
That sounds absurd.
I know. Isn't that
it
crazy?
It sounded absurd until I saw the brilliant Free Jack in his portrayal in that, and I was like, well, this man can do anything.
He's a modern-day Steve Martin. What else? Oh, it was revealed through a tweeted photo or something like that from the set that Doctor Strange is probably going to at least have a cameo in Thor, yeah. Ragnarok.
Somebody got their Zoom Enhance on one of the set photos, and he's holding a little slip of paper with Doctor Strange's address on it.
Yeah, it's
Sanctorum.
It's a grinder. It's a grinder meetup. So,
oh well, yeah, there you go. So.
Well, I mean,
it's fine.
Something's got to make Thor better. Just add other characters.
Well, I mean, Natalie Portman's not in it. And it's
God.
A whole bunch
she,
of.
She was the worst character in the movie. Yeah,
the worst.
Well, I said one of. I said one.
Oh, okay. I thought you said the worst. I was like, worse than Kat Denning.
Yeah, between the two of them, it was just awful.
I liked her in the first one. And the second one, she didn't need to be
I
in that one.
I never liked her.
Yeah, well.
Sith forever.
Oh, my God. Will you get over that?
No.
Get over it.
No.
Is she even going to be in this movie?
I don't think so.
No.
Yeah, because she's busy doing Blind Spot. Yeah. Another winner on NBC. Another movie concept that is being extended into a TV show. Because that premise works as a movie. And
what
that's
does
it.
This tattoo mean?
It means use deodorant. It means use deodorant, dummy. Suicide Squad is defying everyone.
She looks on the back of Red Reddington is your father. I've solved it.
Suicide Squad is defying all critics, and it's still making money at the box office. It's still number one. I think I read somewhere where they said it's to this point, it's made more money than Guardians of the Galaxy made it at the same point in its run. So we'll see what happens.
That's too bad.
It is sad, but we'll see what happens. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, you know, all these videos, and we've talked about it a lot, about Warner Brothers, they need to change course of that. But they're like, fuck yeah, we're making money. So they just probably don't give a shit.
I think they do. They're making some money. But they spend so much
yeah.
to make these movies.
Yeah.
They're not making a ton.
Right, their margins are yeah. a lot lower.
Yeah.
James Gunn tweeted out an early picture of the Empire cover coming out for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. It's just some concept art by Ryan Mandering or whatever, the guy who does all the concept art for Marvel movies. They're fighting some tentacle monster in space.
Nice. And,
yeah.
And it's probably the thing from Arrival.
Baby Groot's out there. Yeah.
It's a crossover. Alright, that's cool.
People from Arrival are going to be in Avengers Infinity War as well.
Nice. Yeah, they said, Vin Diesel. I'm convinced.
Nickname
like,
Civ. Vin Civ.
But see, that's the thing. I think Marvel's at the point where they just fucking tell him what they want people to know.
Yeah.
And then they keep the real stuff secret from him.
He's a fucking asshole.
According to The Rock.
According to The Rock.
Candy ass.
Candy asses.
Yeah, suffice to say, I don't think The Rock will be in Fast and Furious 9. I doubt that's going to happen. They had a bit of a tiff on this last movie because The Rock
is
a worldwide megastar, and Vin Diesel is the guy from Fast and Furious at this point. I saw the trailer for we talked about this, I think, the other day. I saw the trailer for Xander Cage, the new XXX movie, mm-hmm. and like the way they talk about him in it, it's like you'd think they were talking about like the most beloved movie character ever, like Han Solo or some shit, or Indiana Jones. You're just like. Yeah.
He's back.
Who? Nobody gives a shit.
No one does at all.
Exactly. Gives a shit.
You know, it's an interesting marketing ploy to market it as if people care.
Coming out in January. Right. The graveyard of movies.
Yeah, but no, apparently, according to some, I don't know, yeah, I'm sure that they're conflicting stories, but the crew, according to the crew on Fast 8, like, he's the worst person to work with.
Oh, he's
like
a diva. He's constantly a diva.
He's constantly late.
Yeah.
To every shoot, and not because he's doing something, just because he's fucking sitting in his trailer.
Yeah.
And he's rude to everyone. Yeah, like a diva.
Yeah.
And that's what The Rock caught him out on.
Close the door, lose the key.
That's it.
Yes. And so that's that. But anyway, what we were getting at is that Diesel revealed that the Guardians of the Galaxy are going to be in Avengers Infinity War.
And we learned that Infinity Wars will not be split into...
Right, yeah. The fourth movie is going to be completely different. It's going to tie into it, but it's going to be... Like, with the Beyonder?
I think so.
Well, if it was, we wouldn't know.
And Doctor Doom is going to make his debut... In the fourth Avengers
movie.
That's not likely to ever happen.
In my mind, it is.
Okay.
I don't know, man. It's...
I mean...
I wouldn't be surprised if they've made some kind of deal with
it
Fox.
It could be. I mean, now that you get Spider-Man, why not? I mean, let's face it. They've completely squandered any use of Doctor Doom.
Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, no, I'm talking about Fantastic Four. Like, maybe Fox will make a deal with them for the whole
all of it,
and then Fantastic Four. I've said this before, the guy on Collider that wrote that thing, like, I love that idea of the Fantastic Four showing up at the end of the fourth Avengers movie, and then they go what do we miss, and then that's the thread for the fourth phase, Fantastic Four.
And Miles Teller has said that he would love to do another Fantastic
of course he would
Four.
Yeah, I would love to get paid for a second Fantastic Four.
Exactly.
I didn't have to do a second act. It was fantastic.
Toby Kebbell looking at Ben-Hur ticket sales over the weekend might be going, yeah, I'm with you.
We'll get to that.
Even Harry Knowles.
Oh, really? Shocker. Oh, my God. Now that's the shocker.
A crazy review.
Has Frosty seen it?
I don't know. I think Goldberg liked it though. Didn't Goldberg give it a good review?
He did. He did give it a good review.
Really? What the fuck?
It's not that good. I mean, it's not terrible. It's not the worst movie. Well, we'll get to that anyway. And also today, Hugh Jackman released a video of him shaving off his chops because it looks like he's done with Wolverine.
Forever.
So until the reshoots.
Now he can finally go make sweet, sweet gay love to whomever, wherever.
His wife. So,
sure. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. His beard. Right. Yeah. All right.
No, he shaved that off. Oh, and then the final piece of news, which was hilarious because if you can predict the future, which I can,
neat,
is that Jared Leto was cast in Blade Runner 2. And guess who's also in Blade Runner 2? Harrison Ford. And guess who's not going to put up with any stupid horse shit on the set? Ford. Harrison Ford.
Jared Leto dies from gunshot wound.
No, gunshot wound. Harrison Ford will rip his spine out. He's like, ah, God.
Here's some method acting for you.
I crashed in an airplane and I lived. Fuck you. The Millennium Falcon tried to kill me and I won. Now I'm going to crush your skull. You little fucking asshole. So I'm looking forward to the behind the scenes stories for Blade Runner 2. All right, let's do this.
Doug, we've been doing this. I don't know if you're aware.
Oh,
we've been running for like 20 minutes.
15. Maybe 14 with edits. So, which one do you want to do first?
Just go in order.
We should have a wheel. We should have a wheel.
Guess we just go in order. That puts us at Pete's Dragon first.
Pete's Dragon, I guess? All right, fine. Pete's Dragon. It's
hated
another...
it.
You didn't see
hated
it. It. You didn't see it. It's another remake from Disney. It's, I mean...
Of sort. It's more of a reimagining of the Lightning Coin.
Yeah, sure.
The story is way different.
Yeah, it is. And the other thing, too, though, is that, you know, the dragon in the original Pete's Dragon was fully animated cell animation.
This is full CGI.
But the rest of it was all live action. So this really is like, it's not like the other ones that they've been doing where it's like, it was a full-on cartoon and now they're making it live action. This is, you know, the other movie was live action too, except for the dragon.
That's right.
Which is the same thing here. It stars Bryce Dallas Howard as Ranger Rick.
The unbelievable Ranger Rick.
And it stars Wes Bentley as, I'm just going to sit in the corner over here and then call me when you need me. And it stars Carl Urban as the bad guy.
Hey, Will Forte is Pete's Dragon.
No. Wait, is he? No. Hello, maybe he looked it up on IMDb. I don't know. And then
That breathing was definitely that of Will Forte.
Robert Redford. Robert Redford is in it. He plays Bryce Dallas Howard's father. And
the biggest throwaway role of the year.
And Una Lawrence, who was in Southpaw with Jake Gyllenhaal last year, she plays Bryce Dallas Howard's stepdaughter. And Oakes Fegley.
Who the fuck cares?
Plays the little boy, Pete. Oakes? He plays, yeah, it's his name.
I hated that kid.
Really?
No,
Dirty Dan and I didn't agree on this movie. He hated this movie. I liked it. I enjoyed it. It's very, very simplistic. I mean, it's not, you know, it's nowhere near in the league of E.T. or Iron Giant, but it hits all the same notes, basically. It's just a much more simplistic story. And
that's a fact.
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, it is. But it's to me, it was a sweet family film that you can take your kids to and don't worry about, you know, them getting scared and having nightmares and shit like that. It was sweet. And I liked the dragon.
They turned Pete into Mowgli. They're like, that Jungle Book looks like it's going to work. We'll just make him Mowgli. And that's what they did. They did it spot on. It's like, why don't you just make it a crossover? And put Mowgli in there.
He was telling me his problems about this the other day, and I'm just like, you're just nitpicking this thing apart, though.
Yeah, this is a man to talk about nitpicking. Like, come on. Like, we nitpick together everything, and now you're going to slight me for nitpicking on this movie? I don't think so.
It was cute.
Well, changing the kid into Mowgli is a little bit more than a nitpick.
It was. It is. Like in the original story, he's just, he's a runaway.
I thought he was an orphan in that, too.
Well, I think he was a runaway because he was, he had mean step parents of sorts.
Okay.
Raised by his uncle. I don't fully remember, but he's not, it's not like he's an orphan where his parents die, in the story. And then.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. Whatever. I mean, that's almost in the trailer.
Happens in the first 5 minutes.
Yeah. And he's never like, fully, jungle-fied, if you will. Whereas this kid is just...
He's been living in the woods for 6 years. With a dragon!
Yet somehow his vocabulary has grown. I don't know how that happened.
He was reading that book.
It's pretty impossible to me, because he had one book with him, and he's living with a fucking dragon. So I don't know where this vocabulary came from. But man, it grew leaps and bounds over the 6 years, and he was living alone in the woods.
Maybe the talking animals from the Jungle Book stopped by to say hi. Yeah. To say hi.
Yeah. Oobie doobie.
I liked it. I thought it was delightful. It's not the best movie of the year. It's not the worst movie of the year. It was sweet. I thought it was a heartwarming tale.
I nothing struck me. Nothing struck me.
You have no soul.
I guess not. I just was pretty bored out of my mind during this movie.
I thought it was cute. I liked it. It's definitely something you can take your kids to, though.
It's 100% made for kids.
Yeah, that's what I mean about simplistic story. I mean, there's no like twists in this.
Let's put it this way: if you want to write a story that's full of plot holes and not have anyone give a shit, just write a kid's story. Because otherwise, this story just falls completely apart.
I wish I'd known that, because my book would have been finished a lot faster. You can just
make all the plot holes you want when you're writing children's stories. How did they get this dragon out of the thickness of the woods within a day? It doesn't matter. They did it. It doesn't matter. They just did it.
It's because...
With five people, mind you.
Carl Urban is Magneto, and he raised him with the chains. The one thing I did like, though, about the movie that I was surprised by with the movie is that Carl Urban in the trailer comes across, he's going to be like Mr. Mustache twirling villain, and he really wasn't. Like, it was.
He didn't have a mustache.
No, well, it was slightly more nuanced than that.
Yeah. Oh, I wouldn't know if I wouldn't go as far as say nuance.
Well, I mean, so he was
pretty one dimensional still. So I'm not.
He wasn't straight up villainous. Yeah. He was just a dude.
He was just looking after his interests,
right? And
had his belief system kind of thing.
But in the trailer, it comes across he's like, I'll get that dragon, yeah. You know, so it's like,
right.
But that's not the case. Carl Urban, also the best part of about Star Trek. So there you go. But yeah, so that's a recommendation from me and a non-recommendation from Dirty A.
don't bother on this one, folks. You'll be disappointed as an adult.
Let's move on to a movie that Matt saw with us, and it's another movie that's trying to be another movie. This is Todd Phillips's War Dogs, which is trying very, very, very hard to be Wolf of Wall Street. Yes,
but it succeeds in a lot of ways.
No, it is. I mean, it's not a bad movie. I mean, I don't want people to think
it apes it pretty well. I mean,
yeah, it does. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely funny. It's definitely funnier than The Hangover 3.
Like, that's saying anything at all.
It's definitely funnier than The Hangover 2.
But it's funny that that's still how they pin this movie, you know?
Yeah.
From the director of the Hangover trilogy. Trilogy.
I mean, you should just say from The Hangover.
The Hangover, like, yeah.
And pretend like he didn't do those other two movies.
Fuck yourself, Hangover trilogy. Stop it.
The movie it's based on an article that was in Rolling Stone called Arms and the Dudes or something like that.
Something like that.
And it's about these two 20-something guys who get involved with arms dealing, basically, in the Iraq War. And the two guys are played by Miles Teller and Jonah Hill. And I remember, I guess, last year or so, we saw those pictures of Jonah Hill, I guess, filming this. And we were like, holy crap, Jonah Hill gained like a person. Well, I saw him on Any Given Wednesday last week, and he has lost a bunch of that weight. So it was just for this role, it looks like.
He lost a lot of weight.
That's not a recent picture. That's like right before he did 21 Jump Street.
Oh.
he's got, if you look up Sausage Party, and the pics from that.
I'm not gonna Google that. I'll tell you that much.
I mean, go to IMDb. To IMDb. If you go to IMDb and look up the Sausage Party and then see him at the premiere. You'll see, buddy. Sausage Party's also funny. I saw that these two guys didn't. It was funny. It was hilarious. It's crude as anything, but it was hilarious. My favorite character was Salma Hayek as Teresa the Taco.
Well, that's not racist.
Anyway, so War Dogs. These guys get involved in this stuff, and then basically. They basically try to swindle the government.
At the end. Yeah. I mean, the way they get involved, they're not really swindling.
They're following the
actual process that the government had set up.
Yeah, they
just basically like a fucking Google for weaponry.
Yeah, yeah. And then they start out with a lot of small jobs, and then they try to get this real, real big job. And in the process of doing that, they find out they have to swindle the government to do it. They get involved with a guy who is kind of like he's like a banned arms dealer, played by Bradley Cooper. And
kind of the third world
like
country.
BANNED, not like
correct.
Not a marching band.
Right. He doesn't have like a guitar on him.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And Miles Teller. His character has a hot, hot wife that he clearly doesn't love because when she walks out on him, he doesn't really give a shit.
Yeah.
And I would have been begging her to stay.
Jonah Hill's character makes a good point in that.
I agree. Again, I don't know how much of this is actually true.
Yeah, I mean, it is based on an article in Rolling Stone. I think there's a lot of creative license here.
But, like,
here.
The quote-unquote order that the U.S. government asked for, mm-hmm. like, they know there's no way they're getting that without shady shit going on.
Right.
So
right.
it's kind of their way of denying accountability of the whole thing.
Right,
but yeah. They know that there's no way that they're going to get that covered without some bullshit going on with seedy characters in the back.
No, it was good. I mean, War Dogs.
It was very funny.
It was really funny. But it's like I said. I mean, the things that turned me off about it was the fact that it did ape Wolf of Wall Street so closely, but also, like, they talk about how, like, the war economy and how it's become a thing, and the way this movie was written, it was almost like they felt like they came up with that idea. And I'm like, I don't know. Did you ever hear of a guy named Dwight D. Eisenhower, who was our president? He had kind of talked about it in his farewell speech in 1960. And then it's been, for anybody who plays video games, it's been a hallmark in the Metal Gear series as well. Like, the war economy and how it's becoming all, like, you know, private armies and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But by the fourth game, it's all, like, private armies and shit like that. And that's really what it's about.
I mean, this
is just a business.
It's not even the first movie to do this. Like, early 2000s, they had Lord of War.
That's the one with Nick Cage. Right, yeah, exactly.
And I mean, it's not a good movie, but it's not a terrible movie
either. Right, it was a decent movie.
But it's literally like the more serious version
of this movie. Yeah. So it's like, that's what kind of like put me off on. I was like, you guys aren't the first ones to come up with this idea, but they kind of acted like they were. And that, you could say that comes from the naivete of the characters themselves, but it's like, come on, don't talk down to your audience. But it is funny. It is really, really funny.
I don't even know if it goes so far within the movie to say that they try to say that, because Jonah Hill's talking about, he basically says everyone's doing it, you know.
Right.
He pulls Miles Teller into it, but he's been doing it, and he's been talking about how everyone's been doing it, you know, it's just the, how things are run these days, so.
It's essentially the penny stock game from
100%.
Yeah.
Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah.
With Jonah Hill playing the exact same, or not the exact same thing, but it's like he seemed like the exact same character.
Mm-hmm.
Almost. It's almost reverse. It's Miles plays his character from Wolf of Wall Street more so, because he's pulled into the business.
Yeah.
Without the mannerisms. Yeah. So it's like him taking on Leonardo DiCaprio's role.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he, you know, he turns out to be a real asshole. Like, you just think he's some kind of asshole to some people, and then you realize, no, this guy's just a complete scumbag all around.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he is. Jonah Hill.
Jonah Hill's character. Yeah. He just will fuck over anyone he can.
Yeah, but it's a funny movie. It's, like I said, it's definitely better than those Hangover sequels, which were awful.
But yeah, they do. They use the same kind of tropes in Wolf of Wall Street and all this, especially how, like, it ends where they're like, and in the end, it all came crumbling down just because of this little thing, you know, that we,
yeah.
You know, they use that again, which I don't know if that is or isn't true, but it seems a little too perfect for a movie to be true.
Yeah. I almost feel like that Kyle Chandler should have been the FBI agent who busted them. But bring it full circle. So that's War Dogs. Anything else to add about War Dogs?
No, there's not. I mean, it's just
There were no dogs. I didn't.
At war.
No. I was like, what?
I mean, they were all humans.
Weird.
No, I mean, it was a good movie. It was not great, like you said, but, you know.
You're Matt Goldberg.
Unless you're Matt Goldberg, then it's
the best
movie of the year.
Yeah, he called it like Phillips' Goodfellas.
Goodfellas, yeah.
It's like no, stop. Dude. Just, no.
And it is a very solid, very good movie, but stop already.
Yeah, it's not that good.
No.
It's not as good as Kubo and the Two Strings.
I'll never know.
You never know. And I feel sorry for you. Let's talk.
I do love the scene where fucking Jonah Hill blows up on himself after when he's in there, the part that they tease in the trailer.
Oh yeah, yeah.
He's like, how much did we underbid?
$53 million.
He's like, ah, it goes out the hallway. Fucking.
And then the lady walks out. He's like, we're good.
It's very funny.
It looks funny. Yeah. So we don't go out on a low note. Let's talk about
Ben-Hur,
the greatest movie of the year. Ben-Hur.
Her? I never saw the original, by the way.
Neither have I.
I don't know how close this is or isn't.
Right.
Well, the first one won an Oscar.
Yeah, the first one won the Oscar for Best Picture.
So I'm going to go with not very close.
3.5 hours long.
Yeah. Right. This one was 2 hours.
Just under two, or just slightly over two. I can't remember.
I think it was slightly over two. So
Morgan Freeman with dreads.
I'm pretty sure he was in the original as well.
That was essentially his role.
I'm pretty sure he was in the original as well.
Like for right now, he was not.
And Will Forte as Ben-Hur.
Wrong.
What?
Have you been watching those AT&T commercials? Is that not why you're on the Will Forte kick?
No. I honestly thought he was in it.
No, Ben-Hur.
I don't know why they didn't just call this movie Jesus Christ and right. get it over with, because that was what the movie was really was
Spoiler
about.
Alert, yeah. Dirty A.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Ben-Hur is a remake because, you know, if there's one movie you need to remake, it's the Best Picture winner from whenever the hell it came out. I think it was 1959, I think, something like that. Yeah. That's the movie you remake. The Best Picture winner. I can't wait till they remake Spotlight in 50 years. So, fuck. So, Ben-Hur it stars Jack Houston as Judah Ben-Hur. Drink up, Judah Ben-Hur. You truly are the King of Kings, Mr. Burns. Toby Kebbell. A guy who can't star in a good movie unless he's playing an ape. It plays.
That's what this movie was missing.
Apes. Toby Kebbell plays. What was the character's name? I can't remember.
Vesuvius.
Vesuvius.
Masala.
Masala. Okay.
He was his adopted brother. Yeah. Technically, Judah Ben-Hur is the adopted brother.
No. You're thinking of you're thinking of
Wolf of Wall Street.
No. You're thinking of Moses.
I never saw Moses.
Well, no, I mean because the Pharaohs adopted him and stuff like that. He plays Chicken Marsala, and he is I kind of thought of him almost like Theon Greyjoy from Game of Thrones, because they didn't say he was a hostage or anything like that from the Romans, but he was like a Roman kid that they took in, basically. But I kind of almost saw him like Theon Greyjoy, especially what happens later in the movie.
They don't go into much detail about that. It's just
they don't. Just, they don't go into much detail about anything. No. That's what happens when you cut an hour and a half out of the original running time.
Right. It works in some movies.
Yeah.
In some movies, you need to see the plight.
Yeah.
And this is one of those movies where they're just like, and 6 years later, and then right. that's it. Like he's a slave, and then, and 6 years later, and he's still rowing the boat. You don't really get a sense that he was, you don't get a sense of how much he had to endure.
Hey, his beard and his hair were much longer, right. And he was thinner. I can't remember all the other people who were in this. Superman's mother's in this.
It doesn't matter.
Superman, Laura L. is in this. Superman's mother from...
No, it's Kingpin's wife.
Right. Kingpin's wife. That's good. Yeah. Rodrigo Santoro plays a nameless carpenter who lives in Jerusalem.
I pretty much picked that one out right,
you
right
did.
Off the bat.
You did.
I didn't even tell you when it first came out. I immediately when I saw someone doing the carpenter work, I was like, "Well, that's Jesus."
You know, he actually blurted out the theater, "Jesus Christ." yes, here we go. Ayelet Zurer plays Ben-Hur's mother, and she played Laura L. in Man of Steel, and she also played, as Matt pointed out, what's her name? Vanessa, wait for me at the chopper. It's me, the Kingpin. Nazanin Boniadi plays Esther, who becomes Ben-Hur's wife.
Spoiler, talking about spoilers.
Pilu Asbake, who we called the baby of Joshua Jackson and Michael Shannon.
He plays
Pontius Pilate. I mean, I was looking at that guy when he first came on screen. I'm like, is that Joshua Jackson? I'm like, it really looks like him.
I don't want to wait for this movie to be over.
Sophia Black Deella plays Tirza, who's Ben-Hur's sister. And Morgan Freeman plays the most out-of-place guy ever in a movie, as Ildirim, who basically plays...
I'm sorry, but you're a slave and we have to turn you back over. No, we don't. No, we don't. That's pretty much how the scene went.
He basically plays Oliver Reed's part from Gladiator. He plays Proximo. Oh, he plays Proximo from Gladiator.
Yeah, I mean, he is the champion.
The chariot racers. He's trying to win chariot races. Anyway. And the movie is, Ben-Hur is a prince in Jerusalem. And the Romans are basically conquering the world. And there's a lot of anxiety and conflict in Jerusalem that we don't really see a lot of. Because it's more important to show Ben-Hur riding a horse. And because that shows he's good with horses. And
And he can learn how to chariot race in about a day and a half.
In a day and a half. Not even a day and a half. It was like 45 minutes.
Fuck, are you kidding me?
It's like Green Lantern.
Yeah.
It was very, very poorly executed.
His adopted brother, Masala, Toby Kebbell, is...
of Roman descent.
He's of Roman descent. And it basically... actually, I guess he's a little bit like Jon Snow, too. Because the mother never accepts him.
Sure.
But she was very, very happy to see him come back, which was bizarre.
It was weird. It's one of those things where she doesn't accept him as an heir, but she accepts the responsibility of raising him.
I guess. Kind of thing. I mean, she was kind of like...
But he has a big chip on his shoulder because of that, and eventually, not eventually, literally at the beginning of the movie,
he runs off, I
can't do this. I've got to go make my own way, if you will, kind of thing. And he does it for the love of a woman. He needs to become wealthy on his own. And the way you do that back then is you join the army and you make your ranks up to, you know.
So he joins the Roman. Yeah, he joins the Roman army and then eventually comes back. And then that's when the Romans decide they want to conquer Jerusalem. And it goes over really, really well. And Ben-Hur ends up a slave and rowing a boat. And he does that for 5 years. And only after 5 years does he say, no, do not help, just survive. I'm like, I think you'd probably say that in the beginning, not 5 years later. 5 years, by the you're probably like, who fucking cares, whatever. It's like,
after 5 years, you're probably just numb to anything.
Exactly, yeah. So this movie does a lot of stuff where like they spell everything out for you. They really spell it out for you. And by spelling it out, I mean like it's obvious with like images. It's like people saying, oh my God, he's the son of God or whatever. You know, I mean, they don't say that about Jesus, but they say stuff that like super obvious like that, you know, you're just like, yeah, we get it. Thanks.
Yeah.
And eventually the Roman ship goes into war.
Oh my God, Jesus gave him water.
You're right.
What will happen next?
And
he gets drunk because it's wine now.
Yeah, bitches. I'm drunk as hell.
And then
I did not see this movie.
Asterisk.
So then the Roman ship goes to war. It gets scuttled. He's the only survivor.
Somehow, magically,
he's the only survivor.
And I love the imagery of him on the cross in the water.
Well, it's not just that. It's like it seemed like the shore was like right over there, and he just happened to end up like right where his house was. I was like, wait, what? I was like,
yeah.
And so then,
like, where were you coming from? Where were you going?
I know. That's when I turned to you and I said, he has been rowing in circles for 5 years. The ship's just been circling.
You said something, and I said, they've just been doing a big circle in the bay.
It's like they're on blocks. The ship's on blocks. He's like, are we going anywhere? Where's the water?
Very fortuitous.
Yeah. So he gets found by Morgan Freeman, who, as Dirty said, says, I'm going to turn you back over to the Romans. Wait, I know how to talk to horses. Oh, well, then don't.
Well, he made no sense because he's like, by law, I must turn you over to the Romans. And then his next breath is like, I too hate the Romans. Yeah. Why the fuck do you care what about their law? It makes no sense. His motivation for the whole first half of that conversation made no sense when you enter the second half of the conversation. What?
So he takes on Judah Ben-Hur.
For, again, clearly this his motivations within the movie also seem, again, mixed up because he may hate the Romans.
Right.
But he's still in there to make money. Mm-hmm. And he makes, like, the world's worst deal ever.
Yeah.
For no reason
worse than Watto from the Phantom Menace.
For no reason other than, I'm going to help this guy I don't even know.
Right. Yeah. I think that's also a case where you needed to have, like, more time with them together to develop their friendship.
Yeah, you needed more.
Yeah, so he makes this bet, and what happens is Ben-Hur brings his horse, heals his horse, and so then he's like, oh, you must race my chariots. And then they go to what they keep on calling the circus, where they're going to race the chariots, and they make some deal.
By the way, while all this is happening over that 5-year period, Masala has since kind of left being a direct officer in the army, and he's now more of kind of like a figurehead, kind of like a champion of Rome, seen as a figurehead, and it basically he's like the leader of the chariot race. It's like he's the king of it.
Sure.
Undefeated.
Sure. And and then they race the chariots and
yeah, and then he says, Morgan Freeman's like, hey, I'll make you a deal you can't refuse. Why don't you race your brother? To which he's not even, like, batting his eyes. Like, if first of all, he seems, when he sees his brother again after 5 years, he just, like he meant the scene. Like,
right.
There's no emotion. Like, what the fuck, man? But you said, you'd probably think he was dead by now.
Right.
But, And that's not even him. That's every single person that ends up seeing him.
Yeah.
Acts almost as if they expected to see him.
Yeah.
His wife, who he just somehow runs into. I don't know what the fuck you just do that. But somehow runs into his wife, who's like, oh, there you are. Hey, there you are. I see you.
Have you been there the whole time?
Yeah. It just makes no sense.
Yeah.
And then the whole side plot with the mother and the sister, that was just dumb.
Yeah, that went nowhere. That was weird.
Like it means to serve as an anchor for more anger.
Yeah.
But it really was just kind of lame.
Yeah.
The end of it, the way it ends is really fucking lame.
Yeah.
And they're just filled.
Yeah. God, magic.
Damn it.
And, and then by the way, the Romans put Jesus on the cross and
but that is kind of how it is. Is it like even the chariot race is so anticlimactic. I didn't even care. I was like, half of the time I'm like, what's happening? I looked at you, I'm like, I don't even know what's happening.
Yeah. Oh, there's that one part where that guy was hanging and then he gets crushed by the thing and you're just like, I don't know what's happening.
The action sequence at the end, you're just like, what the fuck just happened? I don't know, but, I guess he's winning now.
Yeah. Right. It was kind of like the Phantom Menace. How is he in second place?
I don't know. It was like the Phantom Menace. They even like had the fish that did the every lap.
Yeah.
Just like they did the head.
Which of course was borrowed from
Ben-Hur
originally, of course. But it's one of those things where you're just like, why did you make this movie? It's like, why did you remake this movie? Like, Ben-Hur is considered like one of the greatest movies of all time, or like one of the classics. It's one of the classics. And
sometimes
it's like,
I wonder about Hollywood. Like, do studios just be like, we need a filler?
I guess.
Need a filler.
I mean, it was produced by Mark, the guy from Survivor. No.
Anthony.
No. Mark Anthony.
Mark Summers.
No. Mark, who's the producer? Right. Who's the producer of?
I don't know. Mark Maron.
No, of Survivor and those shows. Mark
Zimmerman.
Zucker.
Brunette. Not Brunette.
Oh, Mark, oh, Mark, oh,
Burrell,
right.
Burrell. Burr.
It does start with a B.
Mark Burnett. Yes. Mark Burnett and Roma Downey, who was in Touched by an Angel.
Touched by an Angel, yeah.
So, you know, so it's obviously they were trying to court, you know, the Christian viewers and stuff like that. And apparently they had no desire to see this.
Well, no, the odd thing. I say the odd thing because I haven't seen the original Ben-Hur. So, again, I don't know how closely aligned this is. But, yeah, you'd think that they would go that route and that's how they'd market it.
Right.
As this is the story of Christianity kind of thing.
Right.
But they don't really do that.
No.
They kind of missed a mark there.
But I'm guessing maybe the faith-based audience knows that already.
That's what I said. I don't know.
But yeah, I don't know.
But
I will say this. It made me want to see the original because I'm like, let me see what the original is so great.
At first I thought that the Jesus side plot, like, he's going to be very ancillary and that was going to be it.
Oh, no. It's the whole end of the movie.
They bring him right to the forefront.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I was just like, oh, okay. All right.
He's the guy. What was the guy's name? Paulo. Remember the two kids from Lost that they tried to turn into a thing in like season two, and then they killed them off. It's that guy, Rodrigo Santoro. He was also in 300. Wasn't he the guy? He was the bald guy who was leading the Persians. I think.
Sure. I don't know.
I'm starving. Yeah. I'm weak. I'm weak with hunger. So
anyway, this movie's
Ben-Hur.
Not good at all.
It's not. But at the same time, it wasn't terrible.
It's not egregiously bad.
It's just.
It's so blah.
It's just there.
Yeah.
I pulled up to work the other day, and a guy comes up to me, and he goes, hey, did you, because they all know that, I see all the movies, and they're like, he goes, hey, did you see that new movie? I'm just like, you have to be a little more specific there, buddy. And he goes, Ben-Hur. And then everyone's like, why would he ask you a Ben-Hur? It's like, why would you ask that movie? It's like, what?
I almost want to watch the original. It's like 3.5 hours long.
I know.
I will keep wanting to watch.
I still have to watch the Ultimate Edition of Batman vs. Superman. Yeah. If I'm going to spend 3 hours of my time, I got to watch that.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's turn our attention to one of the best movies of the summer.
Ben-Hur 2.
The Hurrening. It's like I said, I quoted it earlier, but all I could keep thinking about was that clip from The Simpsons when Monty Burns has Spielberg go make his movie, and he goes, drink up, Judah Ben-Hur. He goes, you truly are the King of Kings. Every time they called him Judah, I was like,
Jesus Christ.
Superstar. Star of stage, screen, and the Holy Bible. Jesus Christ, superstar. Let's talk about one of the best movies of the summer. You guys saw it on a screener, right? Uh-huh. Yeah, and I saw it because it opened up.
I haven't even talked to you about this thing yet.
Yeah.
When are you going to be surprised?
Well, he's already prefaced it by saying one of the best movies of the summer, so probably not.
So, it's called Hell or High Water. It's about a couple of bank robbers in modern day Texas. It stars Chris Pine and Ben Foster, and they play brothers who are robbing banks. And Jeff Bridges is the U.S. Marshal who
Texas Ranger.
I'm sorry, you're right. Yes, Texas Ranger is the Texas Ranger who is he's about to retire.
Is that like State Police of Texas? Is that what a ranger is?
I don't know.
I don't know what a
maybe.
Ranger is. I'm just curious.
It's crazy down there. I don't know.
It's Chuck Norris's band of law keepers.
I was like, where's the horse?
Yeah.
Riding around in the truck. It's crazy.
And
actual Ford Rangers now.
And they're robbing banks. I mean, I don't know how much we want to go into.
They're robbing banks. Jeff Bridges is making racist quips.
Oh my god, yeah.
He got so uncomfortable.
Like, he gets uneasy. Like, you're like, oh god.
Yeah, no. And basically, Jeff Bridges is playing Rooster Cogburn from True Grit. I mean, he's using the same voice as Rooster Cogburn. And, but it's a movie that I felt was, for me personally, a slow burn. Because when I started watching it, I was like, this is okay. But then as it got more and more into it, I was like, ooh, this is really good.
The payoff, that last 5 minutes is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Loved it. But yeah, it's definitely, it's more of a, I wonder where this is going versus where am I right now in this story.
Right. And it very much hammers home the economic problems that some communities are having since the crash, you know, in 2008. And
you almost feel like this movie would have been better served had it come out a little closer
yeah. To
that.
Yeah.
But, you know, the more you think about it, you're like, people are going through the same thing. It hasn't stopped.
Yeah.
For many communities. So.
Right.
But the story itself is very linear.
Yes.
It's, you know, gets you from point A to point B with no real twist to be had.
Right.
Which is a good thing in this case.
It's directed by David McKenzie, and it's written by Taylor Sheridan, who wrote Sicario.
Hmm.
And,
Phil Collins wrote Sicario.
That's the studio.
Oh.
Just say the word. Just say the word.
Sicario.
That's the song I used when we did that. Who else is in this? Those are the main players. Those are the main players.
That's pretty much it, yeah.
Katie Mixon is also
in this. Oh my gosh, she gained some weight.
I guess. I mean, she's always been real busty. So
Nah, she had gained a lot.
Right,
you could tell.
She was, it's Katie Mixon from, Eastbound and Down.
She definitely gained weight. For sure.
And, she was the waitress.
The waitress, yeah. Yeah, she was from Eastbound and Down on HBO.
I think I said that to you. I was like, oh wow. Yeah.
And it's just it's a really, really good movie. It's got and you were right. Before I saw it, you said there's a lot of humor in it, and there is. There's a lot of good humor in it.
Funny, yeah.
Because when I first saw the trailers, I thought it was gonna be No Country for Old Men Light, but it really isn't because
it's No Country for Old Men Light in that it has humor.
It's a similar setting, but the story is vastly different because there's no real villain in this.
Me and Matt are like,
I mean,
look, they're doing it for the right reasons, but they're still doing what they're doing. And
oh no, that's
and
true.
Especially, what's his face, who is clearly doing it because he likes to do it, not because he needs to do it.
Yeah, right. The older brother
is doing it because he likes to do it.
Right.
And he goes, well, I don't want to give
right,
away,
right. But I wouldn't say he's definitely villainous. I wouldn't say he's like a villain. I mean, he's not like
a mustache twirling villain, but he's clearly a bad seed.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right.
There's nothing. I don't think there's much noble about what he's doing.
I mean, it's a good character because to use the word you used earlier, it is a nuanced character because he is a bad seed, yet he does have this deep love for his family and his brother, and he does want to help him.
Right.
But he's doing it to serve two needs. Right.
Right.
So, he is, it's a nuanced badness, but it is still bad nonetheless.
Yeah.
I mean, he's the one who kind of orchestrates everything bad that happens.
True. I mean, movie. But that's, and that's also, yeah. No, you're right.
Once you don't really realize it until you get to the end that he's done so for his own purposes because he wants to see bad shit happen. Mm. He likes to see bad shit happen, so he pushes the envelope until bad shit happens.
Right.
And you don't realize until the end that, oh, okay, well, now he's just doing that because he's shit.
Right.
But, no, I mean, the movie, I really enjoyed it, especially I thought the payoff in the end was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Again, just like No Country for Old Men, very subtle ending.
Right, yeah.
Very subtle ending. There's no big climax.
Yeah.
And I like that here.
Yeah.
Well, I mean...
I'm talking about the very end, not...
Right, right, right.
I'm talking about the final scene.
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, I said to Matt, I was like, I almost felt like, I'm like, is this going to keep going? Or are they going to end it here? I'm like, are they going to go another round? And like, I was like, oh, okay, it's the end. Okay, good. So I was like...
Yeah, the climax of the movie, you definitely know when that hits.
Yeah,
Shit! You're like, oh, shit! Yeah. No! Although you kind of... Yeah. Although, as I pointed out to Matt halfway through the movie, I was like, yeah, that motherfucker's dead. Like, oh, he keeps talking about how he wants to live and loves his family. He's gonna die.
Yeah. It was telegraphed from the beginning.
It was. But I mean, it was fine. It
was well done.
It was. Yeah.
It was well done.
Yeah, just not a surprise.
It wasn't a surprise, no. I mean, the exact moment may have been a surprise of sorts.
But then you go, I guess that's all.
I thought, so you and I were talking about this movie and how it felt like No Country for Old Men mixed with The Big Short a little bit. The characters of No Country for Old Men sort of mixed with the sort of economic sort of commentary and plotline of The Big Short. So those kind of got mashed together. Now you have Hell or High Water. And I liked the movie a lot. I thought Bridges was great.
Did you see him? Did you see True Grit with him?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I saw True Grit. The new one, not the old one.
Yeah, yeah.
And Chris Pine, I didn't buy him for a second as a cowboy, but he was still good.
He was good.
In the movie.
Completely ungrizzled, but good.
Yeah.
Like I said, just keep that stubble.
Yeah. That's yeah, that makes you a cowboy.
Yeah.
No, it's like a male model working, yeah. You know. That's really, I mean, the movie is very simple. Like you said, there's not a lot of twists and turns. It pretty much tells you where it's going, and then it goes there.
Yeah.
So it was an enjoyable
movie.
Yeah,
it's movie. Not like, it's, yeah, in that regard, it's also not like No Country for Old Men, because No Country for Old Men had a couple curveballs in there. Yeah.
A couple curveballs, but it still tells you where it's going and it goes there.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it had a stronger villain.
Yeah.
Oh, for
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, think?
A little bit of an understatement, but yeah. A stronger villain. Yeah.
Everyone hates, generally speaking, hates in No Country for Old Men because there's this big build-up to a fight that doesn't happen.
It's right.
Like, that's the exact point that the movie makes, is that it's never worth it. That's the point the movie tries to make, is that it always leads to something that's...
Well, it's the anti-movie Western.
Yeah.
Like, because it's like, because, you know, it never, I mean, the movie's, what, 10 years old now, I guess?
10 years old.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's, you know, the bad guy gets away, you know, it's, you know, there's, you know, and there's no...
There is no big shootout, though.
It doesn't go the way it goes in the movies, basically. Right. And that's why it's so good.
But the movie says that. It says, like, there's a scene in the movie with Woody Harrelson where they're talking about, like, you know, You think of these big shootouts and they don't happen like that. It doesn't happen like that in real life. And that's, I thought it was brilliant the way the Coen brothers portrayed it. But going back to Hell or High Water, it's the same type of thing. Just tells you a story. Now, the one part that me and Matt were talking about that we couldn't quite figure out is this gets a little bit more into the detail of the plot, but clearly the bank owned the land, but was allowing him to live on it. But at some point, he discovered oil. Mm-hmm. Was he not allowed to pump for oil, or did he not want to because he didn't want the bank to know that there was oil there?
The latter.
That's what I thought. I figured it was, if the bank knew that there was oil, they would foreclose immediately.
Yes, exactly. The land. And then they would sell the shovel. I think they actually say that at some point in the movie.
They?
I think they did say something like that in the movie. They allude to
that. That was my stronger assumption, was that he didn't want the bank to know there was oil, so that's why he couldn't pump the oil and get the money.
Right.
He needed to pay the bank first.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. Yeah, he had to pay the bank so he could exploit the oil, yeah.
Right. Why didn't he sell the rights to the oil to pay for the house?
No, because that's what we're saying, he couldn't.
No.
But not sell the land, but just sell to a corporation, look...
Because he didn't own it. He didn't know. The bank owned the land.
The bank mm-hmm. owned the land, so
he
couldn't
didn't have
do
anything
it.
To sell.
And so when he found oil on it, basically the bank owns it.
Yeah.
What we
didn't quite understand, and this just, because we don't understand how it works. Like,
Big Short
if the bank
could
foreclose, like, why didn't they just immediately foreclose? Like, why, you know.
Why give him all the extensions and pay for the taxes? And...
Hey, and there's your villain in this fucking movie.
Oh yeah, of course, yeah. Bank. Oh, of course, yeah, yeah, of course, of course. Yeah, that guy was an asshole, the fucking banker.
Oh yeah.
And then when we stand, he goes, oh no, I don't want to see you fax it right now. And then they're standing there, he's like, oh, you know who that guy was? The banker at the end? He's the father from Small Wonder. I looked at that guy, I'm like, Small Wonder!
Vicky.
I don't know
what Vicky stands for.
The extensions, everything like that, I think it's because they do give you a deadline. You know, they give you that we're going to foreclose on this date, and then they do it. I mean, they don't just, you know, it's not like
Well, I don't
guess
think
it
he
makes
knew that.
I guess it makes more sense knowing that they didn't know about their will.
Yeah.
So it wasn't as critical to them.
Right.
And probably...
And plus the bank wants their money, too. Well, so it's like, well, you know...
Well, and probably... Well, yes and no, because... Well, yeah, exactly. Like,
right.
Give you enough rope to hang yourself. If they can squeeze more money out of you
exactly, before you get it. Yeah, exactly, yeah.
But also, you know, there are federal standards they have to go by.
Right,
well,
yeah.
So,
That reminds me of a Dave Attell joke when he's like, you know, if you don't pay your electric bill for like 3 or 4 months, they will just shut that shit right off. he goes, they don't like dim it, right. And they give you like the hint. It's like, hey, you gotta pay your electric bill. It's like,
right.
But no, it was really good. I liked it a lot. It was very, very good. I kind of felt that there were some things that I was like, I don't know about that. So, I mean, I've been seeing a lot of reviews for it. A lot of glowing reviews for it. And for some of them, I'm just like, I wouldn't go that high with it. I mean, I give it like a B+.
I think there's some
B+, A-.
Yeah. Some critic inertia going on with this movie. Like, somebody, it was touted as the first Oscar-worthy, you know, picture to come out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think critics kind of get that in their brain.
I mean, I didn't get that feeling from it.
No, I didn't either. But it's...
I know they're talking about Ben Foster. They want him.
Yeah, see, but I don't get that.
But I don't know if he should...
I think Jeff Bridges.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know about that either. Because it's like I said...
I said if anything.
I know, but
I don't actually Foster. Believe that.
It's like I said, I mean, it's like I said for Jeff Bridges. I mean, he's essentially playing the same exact character he played in True Grit. I think he got nominated for that, too, I think.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, Ben Foster's character is nuanced. He does have layers.
But Ben Foster's... The thing is, like, he's been threatening to break through, you know, into the mainstream for a long time.
Yeah.
I told Matt, I said he just needs one more portrayal as Angel in the X-Men series, and that'll do it.
That should clinch it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Through. Jeff Bridges is a very one-note character here. It's just, he's fun to watch.
Yeah.
But it's not joke-telling fun and uneasy.
Yeah.
But I did
it
like...
It was very interesting. Like, I couldn't decide whether he hated his partner or actually liked him.
Yeah.
But I think it was more, he appreciated the job he did. Not necessarily him as a person.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think he saw it as more like busting his balls type stuff. And then...
I think he was definitely busting his balls. I'm not saying he was... trying to be malicious about it.
Right, yeah.
But I also don't think he had, like, clearly didn't have a full respect for him. But he respected that he was a fellow Ranger.
Mm.
But I still think that as a person, he didn't respect him for who he was as a Native American.
I don't know. Because, I mean...
It just got really uncomfortable after a while.
I mean, he, like, was, cause he was constant.
Because he...
was... The scene in the hotel room when I can't remember the actor's name, his partner.
Right.
He turned over in his bed and I wanted to see the one Native American tear.
Just to totally check off the racist bingo. Right.
Just get that out of the way. Just get that out of the way.
I thought, you know, on the negative side, there was some tonal weirdness for me on this movie. Just some things that felt out of place. Given the way the rest of the movie was, during some of the bank robbery scenes,
there were some odd shifts.
Yeah,
yeah.
But I mean, it's a nitpick. It's a really good movie.
Yeah,
That didn't detract from it too much. Now the biggest thing was the sort of casual, constant racism going throughout.
And how everyone has guns.
Yeah.
It's Texas.
Do not rob banks in Texas.
Whoever thinks that's a good idea, because it's clear that everyone in Texas has a gun.
Yeah, exactly.
That was awesome that when he pulled out his automatic, seven cars chasing him, he's just like, and they're just like, we will turn away now.
Posse, disband.
Yeah, it was pretty funny.
Oh, boy.
But no, I mean, the story was really good. And like I said, I thought the final scene was a great payoff. Just a conversation, just a very low-key conversation between Jeff Bridges and
character, character
Captain
B.
Kirk. Captain King, Captain Kirk. Captain Kirk. I wanted to say Captain Kirk.
But it was a great conversation between Rooster Cogburn and Captain Kirk. It was a really good movie. So definitely check it out if it's playing in your area. It is still technically
in the middle, probably not.
It's probably not anymore.
Because good movies like that.
We were lucky to get it because it's limited and they're built. It's doing well. It's doing well for as many theaters as it's in.
I know, but you know how that movies like this go.
It'll go wider. Many
theaters, but it'll go wider. It never goes fully wide, and then when it does, it still doesn't get the audience.
If it catches on, it might. Give it a chance, man.
I don't foresee this.
Well, that's true of every movie.
Any movie, right?
but I'm saying...
If people like it, they'll see it.
It's just... It feels like a movie that's going to be around for a couple weeks.
Yeah. I don't see a larger audience wanting to see this movie.
Like, there was no build-up to it at all. I mean, it just sort of showed up. And then... Yeah, I mean, it's...
But that's what they do with limited-release movies. Because then they put in... some more theaters and more, and they kind of build. It's like a stepladder thing.
They don't show hell or high water. Neither one. They promise at least one, and they deliver none. It's actually pretty dry.
Yeah, no rain. So,
that'll do it for this episode of the Hodgepodge Podcast.
No rain.
We're a split decision on Pete's Dragon.
I'm right.
See it for War Dogs. Definitely see it for Ben-Hur.
Oh, yeah. Hands down, you gotta see.
Skip Ben-Hur. Definitely see Hell or High Water. And for me, personally, definitely go see Kubo and the Two Strings. We'd like to thank Matt for stopping by again.
Sure. You want to thank Matt. I don't put we in there. Don't want me in there.
Oh, it's we.
We're a team. Next episode, I'll be operating by myself because... next episode, I don't know. I don't know what's going on. There's not a lot coming out, so I don't know. Might be a crazy episode.
I don't even know what that means.
Looking forward to it.
I don't know either.
I think it's the karaoke episode.
Oh. It could be. Why not? That'd be good. We drive away our one listeners. But we'll figure it out. And we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening, folks. War was stupid, and people are stupid, and love means nothing in some strange quarters. War was stupid, and people are stupid, and I heard the banging of hearts and fingers. War! Man is far behind, in the search for something new, like a fearless dying, what burning witches do.